Hey, man, I'm hyped for this one, man. I'm hyped for this one. But we're going to have to hold off for a second. You already know what it is, man. It's that You Heard podcast. Hey, man, real quick. Want to give a shout out to all the new subscribers, followers, listeners to the show, man. We blowing up, man. Trying to tell you, we the number one up-and-coming UN podcast, man. We're trying to do our thing. But first, what's up, my brother Joe? How you been, man?
We appreciate all of you guys, man. I'm excellent. I'm blessed. You know, feel real good, man. You know, we hooded up. Ben, come on, man. Come on, man.
Gotta go hoodie mellow with it, man. Gotta go hoodie mellow with it, man.
Hoodie mellow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, let's go.
Got the little track too, man. Shout out to Kingswear, man.
Yeah.
Let's get a sponsorship going, man.
That's all my right, guy. I just ordered something yesterday from them, man.
Yeah, man. Look, we about to get this intro on the backside. We about to get a guest, man. Let's go.
Welcome to the You Heard podcast.
I'm hurt, dog.
Ben and Joe break down all things Miami Hurricanes football.
Don't ask me if I'm all right. Hell no.
From hot topics to pre and post game analysis.
What he said, dominate, and we not doing it.
You heard.
I put my heart in this, dog.
Hey, you got your water, man. We ain't toast first.
Fam, yeah, toast. We ain't toast. Look, I got a big ass water on this one, man. You know what I mean?
Right,
half gallon. Hydrated water, everything, man.
Water.
Ladies and gentlemen. I'm about to
right.
Ladies and gentlemen, your 2017 starting quarterback for the University of Miami Hurricanes. Got him all the way ranked number two, baby. Had the stadium rocking in 2017. Son, I'm like, I got goosebumps just thinking about it, man.
Rocking.
Listen, he took you on the drive for Florida State. Tossed it to Darryl Langham in the corner. You already know what it is, man. Oh, son, Malik Rozier. Let's go, baby.
There
you go. Welcome to the show, man.
Yo, thank you guys for having me. Love being here.
Yes, never mind the Georgia hoodie, folks. Never mind the
Don't mind it, man. I was there for a year. I love those boys. So, like, I got to wear it, but you feel me? I'm always throwing up to you. This is where my heart belongs. But, like, I got to admit, man, them boys did their thing. So, I got to rock the boys too.
And real quick, that was ugly, right? Like, that was ugly.
Oh, I knew it. Like, I literally almost put, like, $500 down. I was like, you know what, Malik? Don't be sports gambling right now. Like, kind of lay off of it. But, yeah. I caught it last year. They were winning again. I was, like, the only team that has the firepower would be Bama. Once I realized Bama didn't make it, I didn't think anyone was going to beat them. Actually, the Ohio State game was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was
me
surprising.
Too. Yeah. Me too. Definitely.
That was surprising, man.
Yo, Malik, man, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you taking the time to get on with us, man. We're honored to talk to you on some real shit.
Yeah, for some real shit. Yeah.
Nah, thank you guys for having
honestly me. Stunned. Thank I'm you. Fucking stunned that we're having this conversation.
My guy is giddy right now.
Son,
my
like,
guy
I'm like
is
a little
giddy.
Son, like I'm like, oh, I ain't even drinking no more. So this is like a different venue. Hey, man.
That's good though.
I'm gonna tell you. So I'm gonna tell you a quick story. So 2017. I want to ask you about those two nights back-to-back at The Rock, right? Like, got to explain that to me. Because just watching it and seeing it, I had goosebumps all over. Son, I was at a wedding, that Notre Dame game. I couldn't go because I was at a wedding. You know what I'm saying? I'm watching the game on my phone. My wife is mad. Man, she's like, I can't believe you're doing it. Like, it's Notre Dame. It'll be all right. When Bandy caught that pick six, son, I jumped out my seat. Thank God, like, the ceremony and everything was over. It was already party time. What was that like in that building, man? Like, being on the field and leading your team during that time, what did that feel like?
You know, it was super surreal. To me, like, I'm from Alabama, so I've been to, you know, Alabama, Auburn. I was even at LSU Ole Miss. I've been to a lot of the big games. And for us to play them and for the fans to show up and show out really the way they did, you know, I actually trained with Jordan Love. He was a defensive back there. And he even told me, he was like, man, your crowd affected us. We did not expect him to be that loud. We did not expect him to be that wild. So, I mean, hats go off to the crowd, cause y'all definitely had a huge part of that. But yeah, man, I remember when Trajan Bandy caught that pick, I can't remember who I was talking to, but all of a sudden I literally felt the bench start to vibrate, and that's how loud people were yelling. So it was one of the best environments I've personally ever been in or even played in. So it's a night that I'll never forget. It was actually funny because we're beating them. I think it's like 35-7 or something like that. It's maybe the third quarter. And me and Cage are like cracking jokes. I'm not going to say why. We're cracking some jokes. And Mark Rick comes over to us, starts cussing us out. So the game's not over. Like, finish that for me. Like, what are you guys doing? And like to me, it was like yeah, we do got to finish. But that, those are some moments that to me, you know, it was like finishing four quarters, don't relax. Like I even saw Georgia whenever they're beating TCU, some of the offensive linemen were eating chicken wings. They were talking about that. walked over because you know at the bottom of the stadium they have like the sections that are by the fan or by the kids. So apparently they have wings. Kendall walked over there, grabbed some wings, hand them out to Kenny, hand out to offensive linemen. Like during the middle of the third quarter, them boys eating wings over there. So I didn't feel too bad. I was like, okay, this is not the only one that has a little bit of fun on the sidelines when you're up.
Yeah.
Bravo. You got Jeff. That is wow.
I think it was like
that is wow. So you mentioned the crowd, right? So there's a debate, huge debates on the crowd at games, at Miami games. You know, sometimes the crowd is not what we see, what we saw at that time. How does the crowd affect the game, you as an athlete or an athlete on the field? And do you blame the fans and the crowd if the team is not playing well? Like, do you blame the fans for not going to games?
So, one, no, I do not blame the fans. I think that, you know, for them to be fans, the whole world is really fanatic. You know what I mean? Like, crazy about the sport. So, like, if a team's not winning, especially in Miami, there's so much to do between the Miami Heat games, there's nightlife. And, you know, I think that university students kind of understand that, hey, if you want people to show up, you do got to win. But I will say for those people that, you know, week after week want to talk BS on social media, but you're not physically at every game, those are the people that's like, okay, pick one. You know what I mean? If you don't want to go to the games, that's fine. Don't go to the games and then be talking trash the whole time you're not at the games. Because I drive all the way to Tampa every week, 4 hours, I'm there at every home game. And even most of the away games, too. So it's just like, you know, I travel good, bad, and different because I support them. So it's like, to me, like, talk what you want, say what you want, but at least like show these kids, hey, I'm gonna talk, but I'm at least gonna be there. So y'all gonna feel my presence. Okay. Presence to me is really big. I know a lot of kids say they don't play for fans or they don't play for people. You know, I've heard the old statement, you know, if we go to an empty field, like it's still 11 on 11. It is, but it's not the same. You know what I mean? The reason why, you know, like I'll be honest with you, the reason why Brevin Jordan and Jaren Williams came to the University of Miami was literally because of that Notre Dame game. Right. They felt the energy, they felt the passion, they felt the love, and that was something that, to me, just needs to be consistent. Like, we understand what Mario's trying to build. And to me, it's not even saying, okay, we're not going to – like, not saying we're going to accept losing, but we support kind of what we're building. Like, you guys see the money that UM is pouring into these kids. You guys see the coaching staff that UM is trying to bring here. So it's like, it might not be fixed this year, but don't wait 3 or 4 years now to finally jump on board, whether you are a Miami fan now or not. It's like, be there, support them, because it doesn't matter if Georgia's playing someone big or small. They're there. As a matter of fact, Alabama's playing someone big or small. They're there. Go look at their spring games. Like, sometimes Georgia and Alabama spring games have more people than our actual football games.
Facts.
You know what I mean? I get it. It's a little different. There's not as much to do, but it's still like, if you're a diehard fan like I am, even before I was a player, like, you're going to go if you can. And I understand there's situations that happen. There's stuff that comes up. But, you know, I would tell you guys, at least from the Virginia Tech and Notre Dame game, you guys definitely gave us a huge boost of energy. Like, I remember walking out and literally getting like chills through my body, because from the bottom of the stadium to the top of the stadium, there was lights, there was fans, there was people. And it was like, I've never been, at least in a Miami game, where it was like sold out like that. So it was a very unique feeling.
Dope.
Yeah. I think those two games were like the essence of the Orange Bowl coming in. You know what I mean? Cause like, that's, I'm saying, like, Orange Bowl got torn down years ago. I remember going to games there, and you felt the whole building shake. And like, you could feel the stadium shake as a fan, right? Like, as a fan just watching like the games at the Rock those nights. Hey man, so you mentioned, you know what I'm saying, being from Alabama, we know you from Mobile, you know what I'm saying? We did a little bit of research. Shout out to my guy Joe. You know what I mean? Like, so what made you decide from Mobile, Alabama to come to the U? Like, what was that process like? Like, overall, like, what's recruiting even? Like, what's the process as a recruit? Because, like, you see all of us, like, having our two cents and shit. Like, oh, he should do this, you should do that, telling, like, other people know how to make their decisions. But, like, what made you decide to go to the U? Like, what was the whole process like recruiting overall? What's it like as a high school kid from Mobile, Alabama?
Yeah, I would say the process now is a lot different than the process when I was there. You know, for me, I was born in Tallahassee, Florida. Family was split, so dad was a Miami fan, sisters and stepmom were FSU fans. So, I mean, my dad raised me right from the top. I knew where I was going. I've always said if I ever got the offer from Miami, it was done. And one thing that really helped me kind of push was that, you know, James Coley and Al Golden at the time gave me the ability to play both baseball and football. So my freshman year, I played baseball as well, which was huge for me. Just the opportunity and the trust of a coaching staff to let a quarterback go in and play baseball, because that's hard. A lot of the teams that I talked to didn't want me to play baseball, or at least give me the chance to at least explore my option. They were like, no, it's football or it's nothing. And so Miami was the school that accepted me for both baseball and football. So that really helped. And for me, it was simple. It was actually when I talked to my podcast, you know, whenever I was being recruited, it's a picture with me, Coley, my mom, and my dad by the fountain. We're taking a picture. That's it. We walk in, we have a little dinner. We're done. Now it's the best hotel. It's dinners. There's a whole movie. They got animation. They got big chains on. Like, they literally strip down base the locker room. It turns like a basically miniature movie set. And so how recruiting has changed. Like, I mean, I saw the University of Florida, they were pulling up like Lamborghinis and stuff. You know what I mean? It's that flashy kind of like in your face, which to me, yeah, that gets you kids, but it always doesn't attract the right kids.
Right.
That's something that, you know, people talk about. And I think that that's where your recruiters, the people that you pay to go out there and recruit, that's their job to dig into these kids. That's their job to figure out, are they here for the flashy or if they're here to actually play football? You know what I mean? Right. And I feel like, at least when I was growing up, like, I'll be real with you guys, when we were at Miami, there was no nutritionist. We ate Denny's for breakfast. We ate out of a closet. You feel me? So it wasn't flashy. It wasn't nice. We didn't have – it was like you were there for football. We didn't have an indoor. We were still outside on the turf. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was just like – they're like what they are now to when I went there is different. I bet you talk to, like, Brian McKinney. It totally changed then too. So to me, I think that, like, you have the flashy. You give these kids what they want. Obviously, you don't want to – and I know it's a bad saying, but, like, I feel like – you know, when you look at Clemson compared to how we used to be, they had all these stuff like waterfalls, multiple pools. Not that we're poor, but so you want to stay with the best. Also, you got to do a good job of weeding out, like, who's here to play football. And I think that's one reason why I really trust Mario, is because he is a football guy. Like, that flashy shit is cool to him, but that's not what he wants. Like, he's going to find out if you play football, if you want it. And to me, I think that, you know, we just got to have really good recruiters, because Miami is a flashy city, so it's there. But still find the kids that, you know, want to work day in and
day out. Which we do. You talking about recruiters? We definitely have really good recruiters in the building already.
We do. And to me, I think that that's the biggest thing. You know, when I was at Georgia, their attention to detail, how much money they spend recruiting, it was crazy. You know what I mean? And I loved it. And that's one thing that I know that Mario knows. You know, Kirby and Mario both came from that Saban tree, so he understands that recruiting matters. Like, I don't really care about play calling, because if my X's and O's are better than yours, it doesn't matter what I call. I call inside zone, outside zone, power, four vert, slant, flat, straight. It doesn't matter, because they're just going to mush you off the ball. And that's literally what we saw with TCU. It didn't matter what monkey called. You know what I mean? And so it's kind of that point to where I think that Mario's in the best spot, because he doesn't have to go far for any type of athlete. And obviously, he's a hell of a trench guy. So getting defense alignment, offense alignment is his specialty. So I think he's in, like, the perfect spot to build what he wants to build.
Joe, you up?
Yeah. So going back to Alabama, growing up and playing baseball, what made you – so you played baseball, played football. Why did you choose football over baseball?
Honestly, I would say the number one reason is physical contact. I love physical contact. Obviously, I'm not a soft person at all. I played through multiple injuries throughout my entire career. And to me, baseball was missing that contact. And to me, at least at quarterback, it's such fast paced mentally, because the game moves so fast. With baseball, it's more chill. It's more relaxed. To me, the only time I was mentally thinking was when I was at bat. And I just like football more, to be honest with you. So I love baseball. And actually, baseball wanted me to stop doing the summer sports to go do travel baseball. I couldn't do that. I was like, nah, I got to compete for football. Like, if I'll stay here and hit. You know what I mean? And they knew I would work. Like, if I'm being honest with you guys, there were times when Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays, I would do baseball and football. So sometimes we'd have, like, football practice in the morning, baseball games in the afternoon, or even during the week. I didn't have Tuesday, Thursday classes because it was straight sports. So, like, they would have to liquid IV me between football practice and baseball just so I stayed hydrated. Wow. So the work was there. It was just more about, like, you know, what I wanted to do. And I love football too much to give it up.
Yeah. And no indoors. So you was out in that heat.
It was brutal. It was actually brutal. Can't lie.
Oh man, that heat's unforgiving. If you've never experienced it,
like, when you're on that turf, that the turf is different. Like, it's like 5 degrees hotter. Like, my freshman year, I remember seeing Al Golden pass out, literally on the field, pass out.
Wow.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, that heat's crazy over there.
Yeah.
All right. So I got some questions. Try to preface this. Trying to make sure I don't say the wrong things. You know what I mean? Like, when how do I ask this question? When I'll ask something else. I'll ask the other shit later. When you're so now you work with quarterback. I had to flip it because I was about to go wild, son. I was.
When that's fine. Yeah, if I won't answer, I'll just tell you I ain't gonna answer it.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, working now you work with quarterbacks, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, you work with TVD, you work with the staff, you work with these, like, when now working with the quarterbacks and evaluating game time and stuff like that, like, how does that process work now? Because, like, you were the guy making the calls before, right? Like, is that become a challenge taking the step back and being the guy next? You know what I'm saying? Like, all right, did you see this Tyler? Did you see this Jake? Or did you see this Jakari? You know what I'm saying? Like, do you work with them, like, the fundamental, like, the steps? I know you work with, you know what I'm saying, with people in the thing, but, like, with the players, like, how do you communicate with them to be more relatable, I guess?
Yeah, so.
Long-ass question.
One, you know, I always ask them how they're coached. So, like, you know, I have a certain idea of what I think quick game footwork should be. I think it's a two-step, but I know right now the University of Miami, they teach a one-step. So I'm not going to fight you on that. I'm going to say, okay, teach me. Okay, you do a one-step. That's what we're going to work. You know what I mean? I'm not going to ever change something that the coach has already implemented, because then they're like, I'm not the one that's gonna get you to start, like the coaches. Secondly, when it comes to play progression, I never ask them really, like, why are you going there, but I'll ask them, hey, what is your read? So, like, if they're doing a pure progression, I'm not gonna say, well, why are you working X? I'll say, hey, what's your read? Okay, I'm working boundary X, I'm working my tight on the out route, I'm working my cross to my dig. Okay, now let's see if your eyes did that. Okay, now let's see if your feet did that. And that's kind of the way I coach, is it's kind of like understanding the purpose of the play and then seeing, hey, like, what coverage was it? Okay, it was cover two. Okay, that's what you thought. Let's see if it is. And it's just simple breakdown. You know what I mean? I don't try to teach them, hey, you should work this route. I don't try to teach them, hey, you know, you should check this protection. I kind of leave it up to the coaching staff because I don't know their hots. I don't know their reads like that. But it's just more to me about fundamental, saying, hey, you know, is your left arm tight to your body? Hey, is your elbow dropping? Hey, is your shoulder lifted when you're trying to throw a vertical route? Or are you sort of flat and you're extending your arm too high? So to me, it's just simple, just throwing mechanics. I don't really go too much into the X's and O's. I just like to ask them, hey, like, where's your feet starting? So that I can say, hey, is your feet on target with your first progression to your second to your third?
Facts.
That's crazy.
Did you see anything this season with TVD different than you saw last year that, you know, would point to anything, you know, struggle-wise this year with TBD or Jake? You know,
yeah, I mean, I would say I've been around Jake. I don't know much about Jake. I know he has a great quarterback coach with Danny Hernandez, a guy that produces a lot of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. To me, I would say the biggest thing with Tyler was just comfortability. You know, I felt like when we talked, at least in the first half after the Texas A&M game, you know, he was just like, I know I can make it. He was just like, I just got to believe I can. You know, that was one thing that I talked about a lot, was that the confidence in someone walking in there and feeling like they can make every throw is big. Like, and to me, that was one thing about Stetson. Like, Stetson Bennett, it doesn't have big arm talent, isn't above 6 foot at all, but he believes he can make every throw and he's going to make every throw. And it's just a confidence level. You know what I mean? It's that ability to say, hey, I know this playbook. I know the plays. I trust my receiver, so I'm going to make the throw. And to me, it was just a lot of that. And I hope that, you know, this spring and this summer, that they have more reps in the playbook, they have more reps in the offense. I hope that, I don't know how much they're going to tweak it, but I hope that, you know, this offseason they say, hey, Tyler, what plays work for you? What plays in that system work for you? Now let's find different formations. Let's find different motions that keep the play the same, but make it to where it's a little confusing on the defense. So I think they'll have a good time collaborating, getting together. But to me, the biggest thing with Tyler is just trusting himself and trusting the people around him.
Right. Let me follow up real quick, Ben.
How
does a new play, a whole new system, whole new offense play into that? Like, for you play in, you know, one offense, and then the next year you're in a whole nother offense.
Like the Lashley. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it's a big difference. Like, I would say that I think Tyler is going through the same transition that I went through from Coley to Rick.
Right.
So, like, James Coley, to me, is one of the best offense coordinators I've been around. He's definitely one of the hardest. But the guy, just – he watched a ton of film. He didn't really care. He cared a little bit about reads, but he was more like just make a play. Like he would teach you progressions. He was like, hey, like if it's cover two, you're going 1-2-3. But if nothing's there, make a play. Like that was his big thing. Like change the game, make a play. Like he was all about, you know, like extending plays. When Rick came there, it was all about perfection. Hey, throw the ball away, you know, spike the ball, you know, get it to a check down. It was totally different than how, you know, James Coley was. And I remember my redshirt sophomore year, because of a lot of that, trying to make plays, trying to extend plays, I threw a lot of wild balls. True. And Rick came up to me and was like, dude, you're never going to play for me. Like, unless you change who you are and how you play, like, you're not. And I think that's kind of the same transition Tyler was going through, is I went from a guy like last year that was super open, super simple, high tempo. I love his offense. Yeah. To someone that's more slow, more technical sound, more like, hey, you're going 1-2 to check down. That's not 1-2 scramble, make a play with a guy coming open deep late. It's just a little bit of a different offense.
Right.
So I think it's about him just being comfortable. And I have seen guys like Brad to Rick, which was James Coley to Mark Rick, have to go through that same kind of adjustment of saying, hey, this is a new offense. Like, I got to adjust to what my offensive coordinator is trying to do.
Right. No doubt.
Yeah. So with the James Coley thing, right, it's more so like instinctual. Like, these are your reads, blah, 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 but make a play. Make sure you make something happen. When you have Mark Rick coming in, installing that Georgia offense and that Georgia mentality, he was more rigid, so it leaves you less of that creativity, right? Yeah. Like that kind of aspect.
Yeah, like,
so
I'll kind of like guys, makes you. Yeah, I'll give you guys a prime example. We played Florida State 2015. It was at Florida State. It was Rayshon Scott's last year. And if you guys go back and watch that game, and hopefully they have it far enough in advance. Anytime Rayshon Scott was by himself, we had something called X menu, which is basically like, hey, anytime it's 3-on-1, Scotty's by himself on the boundary, Scotty would literally give Brad the route that he wanted to run. You feel me? Like, that's how much freedom he had. So, like, if I walked up, and I think at the time it was like Derwin James was covering him because he was at defensive back. It's like, if I want to run a slant, like, Scotty would say slant. If I want to run a go, it's tapping my butt. You know what I mean? It was cool to see, like, you're trusting your players to make plays. Now, if they mess up, it obviously does look bad on you. But at the end of the day, like, when you have smart guys that love the game, that bust their ass to study, I think those are the best offenses. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, you got to trust your guys. You got to make sure they're doing their job. But I think at the end of the day, like, players have to make plays, and players got to feel confident that, you know, like, I'll be honest with you guys. There's another example for me. Virginia Tech, 4th-and-1. We called a pass play. They showed zero blitz, and I knew they were going to back out of it. I checked inside zone. DJ Dallas was a running back. I run off to the field. I get cussed out for doing that. Now, they told me good job. They were like, good job. But if you would have failed, they like, you know what I mean? It's just
right.
Like,
yeah.
A player trying to make a play. That, to me, was one thing that, like, coaching staff, sometimes they don't want it. You know what I mean? They'd rather say, I'm the coach. You're going to do my plays, and I take the blame. There's other coaching staffs like, hey, we're going to do up, we're going to get you to trust, and like, if we fall, we're going to fall together. And so it is two different mindsets, and I think that's kind of, you know, what's kind of happening, is that he's having to play specifically under someone that's, you know, these are my guidelines, these are where I want the ball to go, this is how I want it, where Lashley was more, you know, just make a play, find the open guy, backyard football. And that's kind of similar to how Rick and Coley were.
Okay.
Wow. That's dope. That is so dope. That's what do that, you
that
prefer
so much without That says so much, so I appreciate that. Yeah.
Right. It says a lot, man. And when looking for a court and recruiting wise, looking for a quarterback, is it all about the 6'4", 220? Like, what are you looking for if you're the coach, the OC or whatever? What are you looking for when you're looking for a quarterback?
To me, there's about 4 or 5 things. Okay. Number one is toughness. Like, I want to see you get hit and get up the next play. I also want to see you get hit and make a throw. Like, I think at the end of the day, like, when shit hits the fan and it's a tough game, everyone's looking at the quarterback. Secondly, I want to see your footwork. You know what I mean? Could you go 3 steps on a 3-step drop? Would you have to double hitch because you don't trust your receivers? The next one to me is touch. You know, a lot of guys, whenever they come in, especially like the tight ends and like quick slants or the running backs, you know, they don't understand touch. So they knock guys down. They throw it too hard. Guys can't handle. So I want to understand, like, do you understand touch? Do you understand how to actually be a quarterback? It's not just throwing hard, throwing far. It's being able to make every throw. Right. Last thing would be, for me, mentality, like who you are as a person, because the person that runs on the field has to be an extension of me. You know what I mean? So how do you run that huddle? How do you run the plays? You know, if bad things happen, like if I'm not on the field and you are, like, how do you handle that? And then I would say the last thing would really be a little bit of height. Like I would think as long as they're around 5'11", 6 foot, they're fine. But to me, as you can tell, height doesn't matter. Kyler Murray, Stetson Bennett, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, all those guys are little. They understand touch. They understand ball placement. That was the last one. Sorry. Ball placement. Ball placement is huge. That's something that I really, really teach a lot of my kids is that, you know, I don't care if you make every pass, but I do care where that ball misses. So, like, if it's an out route, do you miss behind them or do you miss in front? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If it's a comeback, you miss to the sideline because, you know, in middle school, high school, it's fine. But when you get to the college NFL level, all those balls are incomplete. It's bang, bang plays. Like, so it's that side of the game that, you know, I tell a lot of my kids, whenever you go to camps, whenever you even throw to your high school guys, like, obviously I expect you to be good. But it's really about where you miss. Like, are you accurate? Do you understand, like, where this ball needs to be placed? On his outside shoulder, inside shoulder, at his face mask, to his knees if you're in the red zone because, you know, you want the guy to go down to catch it. To me, it's just, like, understanding the game of football more than just, like, throwing the football.
So when you're working with these kids, right, when you're teaching them about ball placement, is that more so – just to get a little bit more in the weeds, right? Because I'm learning shit on this too. So is that more so foot – is that more so foot placement, your shoulder, or is that like line of sight? Like how, or do different kids have different little hitches or whatever to their steps?
Yeah, no. So there's really only two. So if you're in the pocket, it's your back ankle. So I want my back ankle. If it's like, let's say the guy's a hitch, he's running 5 yards and turn around. I basically want my back ankle to be set right at him. Like there's no difference in me turning sideways and throwing to you. My back ankle is going to be set right after. I'm not going to be way up to the left, right to the right. Now, if it's a moving target, I want my feet to be set where I believe he's going to go. And obviously, sometimes you'll be off, but that's kind of where your arm slot can help you. And then if you're on the run, it's your front shoulder. So wherever my shoulder goes, I want to throw straight down my shoulder. So now this is what I'm kind of using to create the target instead of my feet. Because if I'm running, my feet can go left, right, wherever. But as soon as I turn my shoulder, then there, and I throw right down my shoulder. So it kind of gives you a target to throw or at least kind of what I like to call a laser. Like, where's the laser? If I'm in the pocket, it's my back ankle. If I'm on the run, it's my front shoulder. So that's really the way that I teach a lot of my kids. And then the next thing outside of that is always set to where his route is going. Unless it is a hitch, unless it is, you know, maybe it's a one step fast. Like if he's running out, I want my feet to be set outside of him. So that when he breaks out, that ball is going to be outside him. So he's running into the route. So just things like that. And then the last thing for my little kids is trusting the throw. You know, a lot of times the kids want to see them open. So I like to do fun competitions to where I say, hey guys, listen, it's a three step, no hitch. Okay, listen, if you guys go three step, no hitch, whether it's completion or not, I'll do 5 pushups. If you guys hitch, you guys got 5 pushups. So I make it a little bit competitive like that. We're like, okay, I'm about to see coach do 5 pushups. And they go 1, 2, 3, ball out. And the kids break in, the ball hits the kid in the face, and they're running. And so a lot of times, you know, I try to make it creative and fun where it's like me versus them on something like simple that they should be doing anyways, but it's about finding something that kind of gets them more into the drill.
Nice. Okay. Dope. So, and for 2 years you sat behind Brad Kyle, right? What did you learn from him?
Over prep. You know, there's a lot of times where like me and Brad would watch a ton of film, and on game day, they would have some type of nuance, some type of tweak. You know, a big one was like Pitt was big on void zone, which is a zone blitz with two guys blitzing, whether it's a corner, Will, two safety, Mike, cross dog. But when we played them, they went fire zone, which means only blitz one. Now they have an extra guy in coverage. So a lot of the quick game we thought was going to be there, now there's an extra guy. And that was stuff that, you know, I learned to always be ready saying, hey, if they run cover two, can they blitz off of it? What different cover three blitzes can they do? And that was something that, you know, just learning from Brad and really just that was the film side. I think that's one thing that really helped me be prepared, especially that 2017 team, was that we had a lot of young guys playing. Like I remember, you know, Mark Walton went down. We had Travis Homer come up, and we had DJ Dallas in the backfield. And there was a ton of times where, like, because I watched so much film, I was able to help DJ say, hey, man, like, watch the corner, watch the linebacker. If I didn't watch film to understand that, there's no way I could help my teammate do his job. And it's not that DJ didn't know, but it was like the guy was a receiver and that, you know, was a team player that moved to running back. And he did that because we needed to. Yep. So it was like, you know, I had to do my job to help him because he was doing his job by trying to help the team. And so that's kind of where, you know, that over-prepare, over-study, just never enough film was really what I learned from Brad.
Yo, I'm sorry, a DJ Dallas story, man. We came on a recruiting visit. My son went to Miami in 2020. we came on a recruiting visit, and DJ Dallas was talking to the recruits. He had me ready to suit up. He's talking to the students and the recruits and the parents in a room, and his passion, man, and his love for the game and for Miami had me ready to suit up. Like, to this day, my wife is like, "Is DJ playing? Is DJ playing?" We watching I'm a 49er fan.
Okay.
The damn Seahawks. You know what I mean? Well, we playing this weekend. 49ers play Seahawks this weekend. But, you know, we cheering for DJ, man, because, man, that guy, man, I love that kid, man.
Yeah, great guy. To me, like, one of the ultimate team players. I mean, the guy just wants to win. He doesn't care if he's playing defense, offense, special teams. Yep. And, you know, to me, you need more players like that. Obviously, the guy's super talented, but a lot of times I think you have talented players that don't want to be a team player. I think that DJ is a great example of someone that's talented and just, like, wants to win as a team player.
No doubt, man.
Yeah. Why is this the first time I'm hearing that DJ Dallas story? That's,
man,
you telling that story was like me at the beginning of this podcast, all giddy. And you like sat up in your seat. You know what I'm saying? Like, hoodie.
He had me in there like, yo, where do I sign? Like, I still got probably a year eligibility, you know, from 95, 96 up. You know what I mean? Like, let's get it.
Yo, yeah, my guy Joe over here was a receiver. All right, man. I think you touched on something that kind of segues good into the next question I wanted to ask. Sitting behind Brad, you got to see how he prepared and how the game was faster, and you got that timing. I think for us as fans, right? Like, there's not many players that got that time to rest, because you had to be the leader for that 2017 team, right? Mm-hmm. That team was super young, starting freshmen and sophomores, kids that never got to sit back. How obviously it was important sitting back. But how frustrating was it seeing you don't have to call anybody out, you know what I mean? Seeing these freshmen that should have been sitting back, getting their bodies ready for the college game, and having to be thrust into be starters, and then not having anybody behind them, you know what I mean? And seeing kids transfer out and all that stuff. Like, you got a benefit, I guess, of sitting back behind Brad that these kids didn't get, and it shows the difference, right? Because it showed your leadership skills on that incredibly young ass team in 2017.
Yeah, you know, to me, that was it. I talked about it again a little more on podcast. I'll bring up two guys. They're both at Georgia. One is JD Davis. Scotty says I said it wrong. So JD, because he hates when I say Davis after. So with JD was obviously a phenom. But I always say, you know, if that guy was not at Alabama or the University of Georgia, which is where he went to college at, he would have played probably 30 more snaps a game, which times 12 games is what, like, I don't know, 360 more snaps.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And so that's where you get guys hurt. That's where guys aren't as productive. That's where guys have low energy levels. To me, you know what I mean? When you have a guy like that, but also comes back to kind of what we're saying, the freshman talent. So behind him was Jalen Carter. So you have a young guy that's talented that is not a starter, but he's able to come in behind someone and learn and still get playing time. And now it's a big situation. I'm not relying on Jalen Carter. I got 6'8", JD Davis, that is 3rd and 3. He hasn't played. He played the first snap. He took off the second. Now he's back here on third down. He's in on an important snap. He gets a stop. But all that's because you have a young, talented freshman that can play, but isn't now being, like, rushed into playing and rushed into starting and having to do 60, 70 snaps versus a guy that's 24 years old, 6 year senior. Now some of these guys are 7th year seniors. And to me, I think it's that dynamic. The next guy is another guy that's going to go first round this year is Broderick, the offensive lineman. Yeah. I feel like with Broderick, it was very similar to Navon Donaldson. So when Navon came, Navon was super talented, but Navon shouldn't have started. Navon needed to lose weight. He needed to get stronger. Yeah. He needed to get more mentally tough. And it's like, because the kid was a phenom, and, you know, we didn't have many of those, he got rushed. Yeah. Now with Broderick, because Georgia's line was so good and they had so many older guys, Broderick was on scout team. He did all the Friday morning lifts. The guy got stronger. The guy understood how to play football together, because now he's having a year with his teammates that he's going to go with. So to me, there's a lot of, like, the mental side, the physical side that, yes, we understand that these kids are young and talented, but you got to let them grow, because, I mean, some of these guys are 24, 25 years old. The strength, the mentality, the mindset is completely different.
Yeah.
So to me, I think there will be a couple kids from Miami that should play early. But I just hope they're not in a spot to where they're having to play early because of lack of depth. And that was one thing that, you know, I think in the next 3 to 4 years between the recruiting class at Mario and Bills, we won't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah, that reminds me of that. That reminds me of Zion mm-hmm. Nelson, you know, being thrown out there against Florida.
Well, DJ Scape too. Think about DJ Scape, yeah. My left tackle as a freshman. Yeah. He's a guard. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, bro, yeah. What are you doing? Like, and I'll never forget. I looked at the Rich and I was like,
oh, damn it, Malik. Yo, yes, you're right.
Be honest with me. When we played Boston College, I don't know who the white kid was, the defensive end they had.
Yeah.
We went like, oh, yeah. 3 rounds. Yeah. I was like, how do y'all expect an 18-year-old to block him?
Right.
How do you expect that? And to me, it was just like, wow. I love DJ. Gives great heart, but at 18 going against a guy that's 24 that's been in the league or been in the system 5 or 6 years, the differential is huge. And so, you know, obviously DJ won some of the matches, but for most of the time that senior should win. And so to me that was stuff where, like, when you're at a good university that has multiple good recruiting classes, you don't really run into that. Most of the freshmen that play are playing because they're beating out seniors, and you just can't help but to play them because they're too freaky.
Like Jordan Day, you mentioned Jordan. He played with my son. He played at Mallet Creek, my son in high school. With my son in high school, he played offense and defense, and they put him at fullback on goal line.
That's crazy. You know
what I mean? That's so disrespectful.
Disrespectful. Man, listen, I freak.
Yeah, that guy. So I got to follow. Right. Yeah, I got. So I think that's the thing. A lot of fans, like the irrational fans, are like, "Oh, we just need to win now." Like, they don't take into account, right? Like, these young kids coming in. They mostly need that year to get their body right. You know what I'm saying? Most of them are in a different state they never been to. They're not all Miami kids, getting acclimated, getting to know the city, getting to know their teammates. To put that pressure on them, like, you see these kids come in and like, oh, you're a top four class. All y'all got to start. Every single one of y'all got to be difference makers. And if you're not, I'm done with you by game three. Like, we see it all the time right on Twitter. Let's keep it a buck, man. That's what we do here. Hey, Malik, we keep it a buck here. Hoodie, you know, we keep it a buck. Yeah, you know I'm saying that because it's crazy. Like, especially like Joe's giving me a lot of perspective with his son, you know what I'm saying, playing ball and now, you know what I'm saying, getting another chance at the Power Five. Like, this shit takes hard work, man. And we're just like, oh, you're 18 years old. That's it. I'm done with you. If you haven't made every right decision that we think you should have made, that's the other shit. That's my shit. It's like, I'm mad at you for not doing the things I think you should do, which is fucking bonkers. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sorry, my little rant there. I always do want to. I do want to show.
I think, man, look, lot of these kids understand that, though. You know, and I think even the coaches say, like, the Miami fans are crazy on social media. Like, that's just how they are. You know what I mean? If you're going to come here, then you got to understand that. As much as they're going to hate on you when you do bad, I promise you, like, they're going to love on you just as much when you do good. And I think that's the biggest thing about the fans. That's one thing that I had to really learn. Is that they just want to win. I'm no knock on the Dolphins, but it's been a pretty disastrous years for them. So, you know, I feel it. They're hoping that Miami, you know, can give them some relief because obviously on Sundays there's not that much. But yeah, I don't know. I would just say that for a lot of the younger kids, that year of all season of getting bigger, like, I came into Miami at 185. By the time they did my freshman year, I was 215. I was able to gain weight. I was able to gain muscle.
And that's how it
is. And I'll be honest with you guys. That helped me break a record in the weight room. So I hold the power clean record for quarterbacks at like 317.
Nice.
And so it was like, you know, my freshman year was where I got strong. My freshman year was where, like, I was able to put a lot of muscle. People also got to understand a lot of these kids might not have the best nutrition system. Some of these kids might not have the best, you know, meal prep during the week. Even if they go home and get fed good, doesn't mean when they go to public school, the food they're eating during public school is really good. And that doesn't mean in the day too, like, they're not at home eating cereal. And so to me, whenever you go to Miami, they give you a ton of snacks, like walnuts, nuts. Hey, if you want a snack, snack on this. So, you know, the ability to give these kids everything they want, a touch of their fingers, to me really helps these kids build. And, you know, that 1 year of really getting bigger, faster, stronger really helps you translate.
Facts. Yeah, man. We got a few more, man. We're going to get you out of here, man. We don't want to take up all of your time, man. So listen, there's a...
I learned so much with the back ankle. The back ankle blew my fucking mind. I was like, it's an ankle. I think it's your big toe or some shit, or your index toe. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's your back ankle. Ah, damn. All right, Joe, what back you got, ankle. Man? That back ankle.
Yeah. So this is going to be the name of the show.
Back ankle.
There's a little back ankle You know what I mean? There's a debate, you know, a Twitter debate. Right? Talent. Miami talent. Does the University of Miami have talent? Is it the talent or the lack of development of the talent in the building? We as fans, we see recruiting rankings, right? So for the past, I don't know, 10 years, Miami has been at least top three in the ACC in recruiting. Mm-hmm. So to a fan, we should compete in the ACC at least. Yeah. You know what I mean? No, we're not going to be up there with Georgia, Alabama, but in the ACC, we should compete. We should have won the Coastal every year, basically.
According to the stats, yeah.
Right. Yeah. For you, yeah. Talent-wise, does Miami have talent?
Yes. Miami's always had talent. It's crazy because the 2017 team that I played on had less talent than the 2014 team that I played on.
Right.
Really, like, there's still guys from 2014 that are in the league, and there's, like, most of my teams from 2017 aren't even in the league. There's a couple, but most of the guys that were on that are in the league from the 2017 team came in with me on the 2014 team. You know what I mean? So that 2014 team, even prior, the talent level was crazy. Mm-hmm. I would just say that the development side is both 50-50. You know, there are kids that I can tell them the perfect thing, but they're not going to do it. Okay. You know, there were certain times where, like, I, as a player, and this is where I believe that it has to be a player-led team, like, as good as the coach is, as much as the coach wants to yell and scream, until a player says, hey, you're not going to go nowhere. Coach said you got 50 reps. You're asking to stay here and do 50 reps. Right. And what I used to do is I used to do it with them. Whatever the reps was, they didn't want to do it, I would do it with you guys just so, like, they could get through it. Right. So, to me, like, it's really just about players – I don't want to say coaching players, but it's, like, players keeping guys accountable, because at the end of the day, like – cover three is cover three. Cover two is cover two.
It
hasn't changed. Right. It is now, like, there might be, you know, a new disguise. Maybe you show here, then you flip and run and turn. But to me, it's just about, you know, hard work, dedication. Like, I know plenty of guys. Like, I have another example. He's at Georgia's Ladd McConkey. That kid's not big. That kid's not going to have a crazy 40 fast. But that kid is going to route you up, because he will be technically sound on every route that he runs. And that is when you get better. You know, when talent doesn't work, talent gets left in the back, to be honest with you. Because, like, when you get to college, everyone's going to be a little big. Everyone's going to be a little fast. No one's going to be just truly terrible. But the guy that – and then it's like – I can't remember who said it, but he was like, you know, the eighth one of the world is compound effect. The guy that day after day gets 1% better, 1% better, 1% better, by the time he's a junior and a senior, he's going to look back and he's going to be a totally different player. Right. And that, to me, is where, like, I feel like a lot of guys in Miami – they've come there as the guy. They feel like they're the guy. And so that work ethic that got them to be the guy kind of falls off. And I've seen it for a lot. And I was a lot of the best players that I've been around. Like, I give you one is Braxton Berrios. Obviously, the guy was highly touted, but there's nothing about Braxton that's super crazy. You know what I mean? He's not running a 4.2. He's not 6.4, but the guy is smart. The guy studies football. I remember there's multiple times where Jeff Thomas didn't know to play. And I literally see Braxton telling Jeff, hey, this is your route, bro. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just a guy that helps the team. And to me, I think that's more what we need of is guys that obviously you need your talented players, but you need the workhorse. You need guys that's going to set the standard, set the tone. And, you know, you're going to have talented players that get beat out by guys that just outwork them day after day.
Facts.
All right. So, Jeff Thomas not knowing to play on the field is wild.
It's hard, though, but, man. We had a lot of plays, but yeah, Jeff was one.
Yeah.
I mean, though, but that's another thing, though. I mean, you have a kid that's, like, from high school, transfers in, is rushing to playing. And, like, at the end of the day, people understand, too, football plays are all the same. The difference is the code name. So, like, this kid for 4 years has known a post as whatever route, and now you're going to Miami, and now you're trying to learn this whole new terminology.
Right.
You're trying to learn a whole new football schedule. You're trying to learn a whole new class schedule. And a lot of times it's hard. You know what I mean? Most of the times the kids that are good have been in the system 2 or 3 years. And when I hear demon, which was our former post, I know what that is. I'm not thinking, what do they call it? And that's what happens. And the game moves too fast nowadays for you to think like
that. It's too fast for you.
That's where, like, maturity helps, you know what I mean? And because I hear it over and over and over again, it becomes subconscious. I'm not having to think, wait, what's that play? But I remember when I was 18, even when Rick first came in, when he first installed his offense, it took me a minute to really understand every play and memorize, like, the back of my hand. So when Jeff didn't know it, when he came in as a freshman, I couldn't be mad at him because I didn't know when Rick first came in, I was a redshirt sophomore by then. Yeah. And so it was like that kind of part of like learning the playbook, being comfortable with the playbook, really helps a lot of young kids.
But that's where like the development and depth comes into play, right? Like where we see our issues now. Like go back through all the years and there's kids that have transferred out at different positions. Like you see us now with a lack of depth at DT and having to play these transfer guys and so on and so forth. And there's a lack of continuity where like you had that like being able to sit behind Brad. You know, I mean, he's still competing, he's still getting better, still improving, but learning that these kids aren't getting now. So for us as fans, it's hard because we're so starved for winning, right? Like you saw what it was in 2017. Fam, that's our last like really good year. Like if we're keeping it a buck. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the last one we're like, yo, look what we could be, motherfuckers. But we did, you know what I'm saying? It's been a struggle since. So like now fans are like, oh, Mario's gotta fix everything. It's like, fam, it takes a second to like build the depth. Cause
it does.
This is my Manny Diaz thing here. He left it so empty that we don't really understand. Like, I think the lack of relationships that he
Yo, Malik, chill, son. Your whole
you saw his whole energy change. I'm saying, like, us as fans,
my son does the same thing, dog. My son does the same thing when I mention that name. Telling you.
I think he's great.
That's the answer. That's it. Sometimes that's all you need to say. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to. It's like you saw Malik shrunk and he's like, yo, fuck this. Like, I don't want anything to say that name.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
Miami. Outside of being a defensive coordinator, I don't like associating with Miami.
We're not gonna ruin it, man.
Hey, let's end this on a bright side.
One more, man.
Yeah, hit him with the question that you want to hit the whole podcast. We did the whole podcast before the podcast, so we got to remember to ask that question too.
Give me your top five quarterbacks in Miami. I don't want to say history, man, because I want to know it maybe in your era a little bit before, because. You know, we don't want to talk about quarterbacks from the 80s.
Because we old. Because we owe the shit, Joe. That's what it is. Yeah.
That's hard. I mean, obviously, I would say if we go my era, if we go 2000s and before, I would rank Brad number one.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know people might be mad at this, but I got to go Stephen Morris number two. I think that guy.
Stephen Morris was my guy, man.
Stephen Morris all day. I think Stephen's two. I'll go with Ja'Cory Harris three.
Woof.
Skinny Testaverde.
The only reason why I say Ja'Cory, because
that was my dude right there, man. Ja'Cory, Stephen Morris, man. I was a real
Stephen Morris does not get the respect he deserves, man.
Man, that kid had arm talent, man. That game against Boston College, man, where he hit Philip Dorsett. Back in the end zone, man. Oh, man. That was crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I'm sorry about that.
Man, we was like, please don't.
Not in the middle of a Ja'Cory conversation.
My computer dropped the internet, and then all of a sudden I had to, like, reconnect. It was like, what's the password? And I was like, what do you mean, what's the password?
So, yeah, that's wild.
All right, so we got Ja'Cory at three.
Yeah. You're telling the Ja'Cory story.
Yeah, so Ja'Cory Harris hit Travis Benjamin in the corner of the end zone versus Florida State. I was at that game with my dad. I remember hugging my dad, and I was like, I love Miami. I'm going there. So that was like me being a Miami fan officially. Like, obviously, I loved him. Like, it was funny because we used to have, like, the college day at our high school. You know, everyone's wearing Alabama, Auburn. You get one or two Southern Miss, maybe even, like, a random Tennessee fan that got booed. And me and then sometimes my boy would join with me. His name's Jay Skoda. We'd be the only ones wearing Miami stuff in the building. So green and orange, walking down the hallway. These people like, Miami? Yes, sir. You already know where we going. So a lot of it because of him. So I would say after that, I got to give it to De'Aaron King. I think De'Aaron King did a great job. You know, I think that his ability to extend plays, make plays was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And then – to me, my last, I'll go with TBD. I think a lot of stuff that TBD did, his the year that De'Aaron got hurt. Some of those accomplishments were outrageous. Throw for 300 yards plus for those many games, and you know, win as many freshman player of the week. You know, I don't think that there will be someone that can do that for a very long time. So to me, those would be my top five.
Yeah, I gotta put you in there, man. I gotta put you in there.
I can't put myself. I can't
rate put yourself in there.
Be my top five that I've seen.
Yeah, no, yes, I definitely put you in my top five. You're my top five for sure. Stephen Morris is my top five. We're not going down the whole. I put Kyle Wright in there. I thought he was. You know what I'm saying, concussions aside, I thought Kyle Wright was in my top five.
I didn't watch much Kyle Wright.
I'm not gonna go out. You know what I'm saying, Kyle Wright was nice, man, but he just wrong place, wrong time type of situation. And just he had all the arm talent, came in. You know what I'm saying, highly talented, did his thing, but just things didn't align for him. Stephen Morris, no doubt. I mean, Ken Dorsey's easy. You know what I'm saying, that's you know what I'm saying, that's up there. That's an easy mention. That's an easy one.
I didn't want to say Ken or Gino or any of those guys.
It's too easy. So it's an easy one. Joe, you had another fun question. What'd you get before the whole skinny test?
Nah, that was it.
First of all, that was it. Greatest nickname in Miami Hurricanes history. I don't know if me and my friends made it up, but like or became viral.
I've never heard that before you said it. I've never heard
that. Yeah, skinny Testaverde, man. I'm saying out of the West with all them bulls.
I ain't gonna lie, Dakari Harris ain't cannon though. Him and Stephen Morris could absolutely sling.
Man, I was just talking about the Boston College game.
He used to throw BBs, man. Like, receivers used to hate catching balls from him. They used to be like, "Bro, it hurts." Like we used to go play in the cold. They used to be like, "My hands are numb." Like literally, you used to whistle off the ball like that. Man. That guy had a cannon.
And it looked so effortless too. It was like, how do you throw it 60 yards? Like it just came up. You know what's crazy? When the camera does this shit, when it, like, pans over, where it has to, like, catch up with the ball, it was wild. Hey, man, before we get you up
out. Dakori Harris commercial. Did I not see a Dakori Harris commercial, man? Is he a firefighter?
Firefighter, yeah.
He's a firefighter.
He's up there, though. He's, like, a chief or, like, a captain. Like, he's up there.
It was a commercial for something different, though. It wasn't, like, a firefighter commercial. It was a commercial for something different. And it was on this weekend.
Oh, no.
I'm in Charlotte, man. And I was like, look at fucking Jacory.
We can not.
That's crazy.
I love that. I'm in Florida. I haven't seen a Jacory Harris commercial. I need to find this shit on YouTube.
You definitely got to like clip it, link it on Twitter or something.
That's got to be out there.
But I missed it.
We get you up out of here, man, let us know about was it Millionaires Club, man? Because we wanted to make sure. We asked before, like, you don't got to be a millionaire to be in the club. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to my guy Joe asking that question. Because I didn't want to ask you because, you know what I'm saying, my tax bracket ain't up that high.
I mean, mine's not either, so we're all trying to get up there. Yeah, the point is, it's really like a mindset. You know, obviously, we want all these student-athletes to at some point touch $1 million. So, really, the plan is at some point, whether you make it to professional or not, you know, these kids are going to have to stop playing football. And so what we're trying to do is we're partnering with the university. We're actually working on that logistically now. And we're actually signed 16 student-athletes to NIL deals, a little different than most traditional ones. So what we started off doing was we did 5 weeks of educational courses from, like, real estate to moving companies to just how to simply build a business. Like, what is a cash flow? What is revenue statements? Like what goes into just any type of business? And then from there, we've had different events. So during Art Basel, we rented out pillows. We have an end of the year dinner February 18th. And basically we have $100 NFTs. And what that does is that verifies that you have ownership. So it's a way to prove ownership. And we have different events with student athletes and you guys get to come, as well as during the seasons, I'm at every home game. We have box seats. So food and drinks on us. We usually have like Amon Richards, Scotty will come this year. So I have Rayshon Scott, I have Cam Harris. I've had Evidence Njoku. I've had all type of different Miami guys come through. John Beeson came through one time. So I'm just trying to connect, you know, student athlete, fan, and alumni all together. And my biggest point is that, you know, at some point these kids are going to have to either go into the workforce or create their own business. So it's really helping them kind of set their path. I've connected with some of the best people in the industry on different industries, from real estate to moving to franchising to music industry to gaming. And so that's really where, you know, I want to help these kids as they're in college really use their power of who they are, truly network with people. Because to me, it's really about who you know, not what you know.
Facts. That's dope, man.
Appreciate you.
Financial literacy, man, and anything like that. Anytime you want to help these young men, because I'm saying we talk about it on the show. I don't like calling anybody who makes a decision like this a kid. These are young men making these decisions and teaching them life after football and what to do, and just knowing that there's different avenues of income. Shout out to you, man. That's amazing.
Now, though, like, we had two guys, DJ Ivy and DJ Scaife. You know, they wanted to purchase an ATM machine and put an ATM machine somewhere. So you put it in Miami. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone uses it, you get 3%. And that's theirs to keep. And so they hold it for 15 yeah. years. That can make them $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 just passive income. Yeah. You know, and mm-hmm. then what we're also doing is, like, with real estate, like, we're teaching them commercial, we're gonna teach them residential, we're gonna teach them government real estate. So it's not only, you know, do I go into real estate? It's what different types of real estate are there. You know, even if you go into moving, like, there's different ways to move people, whether you just do the trash, whether you actually move them, whether you're doing commercial moving where you don't even work with people, you work more with major companies that's shifting from one part of the country to the next. So that's really what we're trying to get them into, because I feel like books nowadays are outdated between how fast society moves and obviously technology.
No, for
that
sure.
You want people that are very successful in the current space to teach these kids. Because I feel like by the time I read a book that was made in 2018, by the time I get out and it's 2025, that book's irrelevant. You know, those 7 years, things have passed, changed. Like, yeah. I know the big thing right now is the AI bots, the AI chats. I was actually on Twitter and they're talking about ways for AIs to build out marketing plans, build out budgets, build out business models. Like, you say, hey, I want to build, like, you literally say, hey, I want you to build me out a car wash business model. And it'll go through and yeah. it'll try to build you out an exact model. So that, to me, is where the world's going to change, because by the time they get out, like, there's going to be so much new technology that's going to help people nowadays.
So on that ChatGPT,
that yeah, that's it. Is
crazy. Bonkers, fam. Yeah, bonkers. Crazy. Like, yeah. You can have entire conversations. Like, I'll tell you some shit. I made it write an intro and a rap for this podcast, and it did it. Like, I was like,
sharing it with me, man.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, man, like, it'll turn it into a battle. It doesn't curse or anything like that, but it's wild. Like, it tells you recipe, it tells you everything. Like, it's to me, it shits on Google. Sorry, this is going up on YouTube. This
oh yeah, shit, yeah. Like, yeah. Well, they said Microsoft bought like 49% of it.
Wow,
fam, like
it was like for millions, but yeah, no, I mean, someone's gonna want to compete with it, but I think that open chat is gonna be crazy with the ChatGPT. I'm very interested to see where that goes. Technology to me is becoming something that's crazy nowadays.
And it goes back to what you said, right? Like, if you read a book about it in a year and a half, ChatGPT will be something totally different, way bigger that everybody goes to, and it'll be like an app. And I was like, oh, remember ChatGPT? Yeah, motherfucker, we lived it. Like, that already happened. Like, yeah, facts, we know.
Facts.
That ChatGPT blew my mind. Yo, it was crazy. I watched a YouTube video. Like, it'll literally write a financial literacy book for you with chapters and breakdowns of it's crazy. So learning that, just having that ability, like, that's wild. George, you got anything else, man?
I appreciate it, man.
I got a question for you guys, if you guys don't mind me asking.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. Hey, what's
up? What is y'all's thoughts on a new stadium?
Joe, you want to handle this first?
I would love for Miami to have their own stadium. I would love it, man. I really don't care for going into a stadium and seeing dolphins. Things, mm-hmm. dolphin colors, and mm-hmm. I don't care for that. You know, the distance from the stadium and all that. I don't really mind that, because the student body fan base is not huge. So,
but you don't think though? So I don't mean to cut you off, but you don't think that if the stadium was closer to the students, that the students would go more often. Now, I don't think that it'll be overwhelming. This is my biggest thing I've said. When you go to Georgia games, I know like Miami games are crazy, but when you go to Georgia games, they're not that crazy. They're more subtle. The stands are packed. Yeah. You see a lot of older people there. But to me, that's because ever since I was 18 years old, and probably that, because my family's probably alumni as well, the stadium's super close, so they always went to it. And that's one thing, like, I used to ask, like, why do you still go? It's like, oh, like, I used to go when I was in college, because I used to walk to the stadium, and then we always won. And so now it's like, that must make it like a family tradition. But to me, I think that's a lot of buy-in from the university students. Yeah. And I think with the stadium closer, like, I remember there were so many times where you're asking people, I mean, and you guys obviously pregame too, but a lot of these college students, if it's a noon game, they're up at 6, they're pregame by 7:30, mm-hmm. and now they're drunk mm-hmm. on a hot, sweaty yellow bus asking to get drove 45 minutes up north and then hope that they can find a ride 45 minutes back down south.
Yeah.
And so to me, it was a lot of that stuff that I saw. And I was like, you know what? I don't even blame y'all. Like, there's no way that I'm going to be in a hot, sweaty bus, half drunk, trying not to throw up on the highway with no AC. Yeah. Like, no, like, I'll stay here, watch the game on TV. Y'all catch me.
Yeah,
that's
fast.
That's fast. Because I know a lot of the fans that are not students are from Miami, really is a national brand, man. It's mm-hmm. fans
come from all way up north. Yeah.
Man, I'm from New York, born and raised in New York, man. Miami fans since I was fucking 10 years old. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a lot of Miami fans in New York. So, you know, where the stadium is at now, I know I've heard a lot of people on Twitter say it's a perfect location for them because they may live up north or, you know, it's not far from for them, you know. But me personally, I would like Miami to have their own stadium. You know what I mean? Definitely. If it's closer, no doubt. They're talking about the Tropical Park. No doubt. That'd be fantastic.
I think that'd be perfect. Yeah, because that's like a 15, 20-minute bus ride. That's a lot easier. To me, like, I think it's more that. Like, I think you have to get the student body bought in. Like, at Alabama, at Georgia, I know they have a lot more students, but their student body's bought in. I feel like Miami doesn't have that. And I feel like half the reason, I'd be interested to see if we did move it, how much more of the students would actually come. And that, to me, I think that's what I like. That's just a big guessing game. But I think you definitely have more kids buy in. And obviously, to me, when you have the kids buy in, then when they get older, they obviously want to invest more back into the program because since I was 18 years old, I've been watching you guys because I went to every football game. There's a big cycle with that too as well with some of these kids becoming donors over time.
When I win this Mega Millions, we definitely going to have a stadium. You know what I mean?
It's crazy. You and John Ruiz can finally tag team that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be there.
That's my first call. You know what I mean?
Hey, John, exactly. Where do I invest?
With the stadium thing, I think it does make sense to move it just for the student body thing, but that Georgia stadium's been there a long time, so that's over time we might see the investment and the returns on it, but initially, like, a lot of fans would be like, man, I don't know if we want to move it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm with Joe, man. I don't like going to a Hurricanes game on Saturday and the whole stadium's aqua. It doesn't make me feel like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because it also, like, makes the empty stadium look more empty. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you put that green and orange, you could kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like, there might not be as many people.
I don't think you make the stadium that big. I think you shrink the stadium.
Yeah. No, you shrink the stadium 100%.
50,000, man. 55. You know what I mean? I think it's good. Yeah.
I personally think just kick the Marlins out, you know what I'm saying, sell them, and then just, you know what I'm saying, flip that whole stadium over. Yeah, it's already there. Restructure it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the structure's already there. Paint it. You know what I'm saying? It's already there. That's the home. That's the burial ground of the OB.
That'd be the perfect area to have it.
Facts.
Yeah. I don't like the Marlins anywhere. Like, I could care less about them. So they could just go to, like, Montreal or some shit. Somebody.
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone in Miami that really care about the Marlins, to be honest with you. So
yeah, they can go ahead and go, man.
Montreal Marlins. That sounds good, man. Montreal Marlins.
I don't think they even got Marlins up there.
Go to Fort Lauderdale? Can they go up there? Like,
literally anywhere.
They can go to Harvard.
Or maybe they can go out west. Can they be the Doral Marlins? They go out west. They're the talent out west. They go in there and buy a major property on Doral. They can own Doral. Yeah.
They're about to sell the team again, man. That team is trash. But yeah, man, I think that'd be the perfect site because that way you don't have to worry about building a whole new stadium, waiting, having to wait 5 to 7 years, and then that stadium's already there and just flip it that way, man. I think that's what John and turn it and call it Life Waller Stadium. I don't give a fuck. Like, you know, who cares? Put the naming rights on it. It's all good for me, man. Nice. But I'm with you. They do need their own stadium.
Yeah, I was wondering your thoughts on that. I see a lot of back and forth on social media about that.
Yeah, that shit crazy. People who saying that's crazy. That don't make sense. I don't want your own state. That doesn't make sense. Yes.
That don't make sense. Yeah, that doesn't. They just try to excuse it because my taxes. Hey man, most people flying in anyway. We ain't paying those taxes. The fuck I care about your taxes. Like, sorry. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, my taxes. My taxes are what they are. Ain't nobody worry about my tax, but I got to worry about yours. Only Florida.
Yeah, man.
All right, Malik, man. Hey, thank you. Hey, look, before we get out of here, man, yo, shout out to you asking the question and our listeners, like, literally shouting us out for you to be on the show, man. That was crazy to us. So, hey, man, thank you so much for being on the show, man. Hey, look, open invitation. Whenever you want to jump on, man, hit us up, man. We could talk about whatever you want, man. You know what I'm saying? And we'll chop it up, man. Thanks, Malik.
I will. Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, man. It's all about you, baby. We out of here.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.